From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The residents of our diverse district recognize that they have not been well served for the last 13 years by an AWOL state representative more focused on self-service than public service, who decided to switch parties, in fact, if not name.
I think Mr. Prof maybe represents a wing of the party who needs to rethink how we deal with the electorate. And I think as Republicans, we need to realize these are working people.
It's about this state facing a crisis. And that crisis was there Monday before the election, and it's still here on Thursday.
From my first run for office, I have been underrated in every election since then. Counted out by political pundits and Washington insiders. And in every election, I have beaten the odds and exceeded expectations. I have won every race. The next election will be no different.
What's most important is that Illinois Democrats are working together to beat Mark Kirk. Absolutely. To deprive Mitch McConnell of another vote and to take back the Senate.
Those are some of the voices from primary election night in Illinois. We'll be talking about who won and, just as important, who lost. It's coming up on today's State Week in Review. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Joining me in studio, Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, it's Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio reporter, and our guest, Monique Garcia, Statehouse Bureau Chief for the Chicago Tribune. Monique, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll get to the results from election night first, but let me go around all of you at first, and just let me ask you, as another milestone has passed, that's the primary election. I've heard for months, wait till after the primary, lawmakers will get together, they'll decide on a budget, whether it's approving more revenue or cuts or both, a deal can be put in place after the primary. So the primary is now over, and let me start with you folks at the State House. Can we expect any budget agreement soon now that this is out of the way?
Well, I'm just going to keep going back to the line from the movie Groundhog Day that I've been uttering all spring. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, and it's going to last you the rest of your life. So, no, I don't see any immediate resolution to the budget standoff because attention, you know, no sooner had the last ballots been counted than attention turned to the fall elections. And now it's going to be, this is just going to have been a preview, all this unprecedented spending and political attacks. They were just getting warmed up.
Right. I think it was naive to think that this would clear the way for any kind of resolution. And already you have both sides digging in. I mean, immediately afterwards, they talked about the proxy wars, who was the real winner, who was the real loser here. And right now, both sides, Speaker Madigan's claiming victory and Governor Rauner's claiming victory on some smaller races. And that just gives both of them ammo to continue on the same path that we've been on.
Charlie Wheeler, I assume you agree.
I guess I would confess to extreme naivete because I was the one last fall predicting that once we saw who the candidates were who were not going to be challenged in the primary, and then when we got into January, when you need lesser amounts of votes to pass stuff, that there would be some compromise reached and that the governor and the Democrats would sit down and they'd hash out spending and revenue, and we'd kind of return to the normal world. I guess I was relying too much on past experience when we had rational people in the governor's office and when we had legislators who were less inflexible than the current group.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, we'll leave the rational comment aside. I think from their standpoint, they are being very rational. And from the governor's standpoint, he is in this. He, as he has said, he thinks Illinois is going in a death spiral, and he is doing anything he possibly can within the law, I guess, to make sure that that doesn't happen. And he believes that what he says is a pro-growth agenda that he's pushing that, you know, does put some limits on government employee unions and does some things to help businesses out is essential in order for Illinois to progress and move forward as a state and recover from the financial miasma. I don't know what's the right word there. That's probably not it. But, you know, the governor is committed, and I think we've seen just more evidence of that this week.
Right. Ultimately, on both sides, this is viewed as the long game. This isn't about 1-year budgets, 2-year budgets, or really probably even budgets. It goes beyond that, as Brian mentioned, for the governor looking to turn around the state, as he likes to say, and for the speaker to maintain his control over the Democratic Party.
Well, certainly higher education, which has gone without funding since last summer, and a lot of social service agencies as well. They woke up to Friday morning headlines that talked all about the fact that another big piece of legislation, a budget bill that would fund them, was passed out of the state Senate this week. So, Monique, let me turn to you on that. Are we basically just going in circles here? Is there something that we can read into this piece of legislation?
As far as I'm concerned, and as all signs point to, this is more of the same. So this mirrors legislation that the House passed a few weeks ago that also got big headlines saying, look, we're going to fund higher ed, schools are going to be okay. But the governor has continually threatened to veto these piecemeal measures. He says we don't have enough money to pay for it. Democrats argue this is about getting folks in line so that the comptroller has to decide ultimately who gets paid. But no, the game's not over yet. The bill that the Senate passed would free up nearly $4 billion. About half of it would go to higher ed for colleges and universities and also for scholarships for low-income students. But it also contains a wish list of other things that Democrats have long push for, transit funding, funding for rape crisis centers, for autism programs, for the disabled, for the elderly. But the governor's office and Republicans had said it's all a fraud. You're out there to get the headlines and to be able to circulate flyers in the fall election saying you voted for funding, but you know that this money will never be there.
Yeah, and meanwhile, this week, we had the Illinois comptroller come out and say that she thought the backlog of bills, basically Illinois' debt, that, you know, we contract with people to, you know, pick up trash at the state fairgrounds and take care of the elderly people in their homes so they don't go to nursing homes, all kinds of different things that the state contracts to do, that backlog of bills is going to be $10 billion. That's $10 billion with a B by the end of the budget year. I mean, that's what, about a third to a quarter to a third of annual state discretionary spending every year? And I think that what's eventually the governor and his allies in the business community, we'll have to sit down and maybe think about, you know, how long do we keep this fight going? Because, I mean, by that measure, Illinois is definitely worse off than it was 2 years ago, right? Like the tax increase or hate it, it did actually contribute to bringing down this backlog of bills. When that tax increase expired, there was the automatic tax cut at the beginning of last year. That backlog has been going up, and it's only going to get higher from here on out.
Right. I think that the last time Illinois had a $10 billion deficit was shortly after Governor Pat Quinn came into office. This was post Rod Blagojevich, in the middle of the economic downturn.
Yeah,
correct.
Right.
And it seems that the tax hike did little to nothing. And even though we don't officially have a complete budget because of court orders and because of laws and because of some action that the governor took, we're spending at a clip like we did have it. And before, I mean, it wasn't enough. We weren't able to totally pay down that backlog now, but it's going higher and higher. And meantime, in addition to that, unemployment rate went up in most metro areas across the state. And S&P will note again that we are still dead last in terms of our credit rating.
Yeah. And I mean, I would just say, I mean, I think the tax hike, I mean, it was effective at this while it was in place. But now that it's gone, yeah, certainly that's.
Well, and I would argue that in fact, and despite the assertions to the contrary, the tax hike allowed the state to do things, to do two things. One, it basically cut in half the bill backlog. And secondly, it allowed the state to make the required pension payments every year. And I think that was a big thing. And that's where most of the money went.
Yeah, it's funny that you have to say that as like something that's novel and good, that Illinois would make its pension payments every year. But yeah, you're right.
Well, Charlie, you've touched on this before, that you believe it's going to take cuts and revenue to dig out of this hole. So you know, part of you sits there and says, why don't these people just get together and start working on this? Because it's not going to be an all or nothing solution.
Well, and from my perspective, as I said many times, I think it's on the governor. And the governor, I know that he has this firm belief that we have to do something about unions, that they're the cause of our death spiral. But the fact of the matter is that he does not have the votes in the legislature. Democrats are not going to buy that plan. So,
and probably even some Republicans, too.
Well, and a lot of Republicans won't either. And so, to me, and again, I go back to kind of rationality as opposed to being emotionally involved and so committed to an idea that you can't think outside of that, that you sit down and you work around the edges. As I've said many times, you work on workers' compensation, you work on tort reform, you make little changes, but you don't try and destroy the unions. And then you work on the revenue side and you work on the cuts. Brian, you mentioned that our bill backlog is going to be anywhere between a third and a quarter of the money that comes in of our general funds budget. There's no way you can cut that amount of money out of the budget. It's just not feasible unless you decide, okay, for this year, we're not going to do any funding at all for elementary and secondary education, or we're not going to do any funding at all for health care. Those are the kind of cuts you would have to make, those drastic cuts, to be able to save $10 billion in a year. You just can't do it.
Just by way of comparison, you could shut down every prison, free every prisoner, lay off every prison guard in Illinois, and that would be $1.3 billion. So 13% of the bill backlog.
Or you could do away with the entire General Assembly, the whole legislative branch of government, do away with the whole judicial branch of government, and you still wouldn't have $1 billion in saving.
So again, you're really not going to get out of this even in 1 year, even with cuts of revenue. So is it a 3, 4, 5 year plan to try to do it? Is that what they need to be working on?
I think you have to have a long range plan involving cuts and involving raising revenue. I think the estimate is, well, I'm not going to say, I don't remember exactly. I think it was something like if you raise the income tax rates 1% from 3.75 on individuals to 4.75, you bring in maybe $3 billion. So that would take you a space of 3 years at that rate to be able to bring the backlog down to nothing.
But the difficulty in this also lies in what is going to be politically feasible. Both Democrats and Republicans acknowledge the need for this mix of cuts in revenue. Even the governor has said, yes, I'll sign on to some kind of revenue if you go along with my other plans. But you have to find, and lawmakers and legislative leaders have to find something that ultimately can pass. Lawmakers aren't going to vote for a major tax increase if it's not going to make a dent in some of the backlog. But they also don't want to have to vote for massive cuts at the same time that they're voting for a tax increase. It's hard for folks who don't follow this closely every single day to understand, why are you also cutting $5 billion and raising my taxes at the same time? What am I getting out of this?
And to speak to the politics of it, again, the conventional wisdom is that if you vote for higher taxes, it's going to kill you at the polls. The evidence suggests the contrary. A couple years ago, went back and looked at every roll call from the one in 1969 that created the income tax through the increases in the 80s, through the early 90s when we kept in place a tax increase. The people who voted yes on those roll calls got reelected the next time they were up at a greater percentage than the people who voted no. And you might say, how could that be? And the answer is that those roll calls were structured roll calls where the party leaders agreed, the Republicans and the Democrats and the Republican governor, because in these instances it was a Republican governor, this is what we're going to do. And I'm the Democratic leader. I'm going to put on so many votes. You're the Republican leader. You're going to put on so many votes. And we pick the people who are in the safest districts, people who could get reelected no matter what, they are the ones who vote yes.
But we should know that now, Charlie, because the primary's over. There's so many of them that are running unopposed.
As a matter of fact, right now it's certain that John Cullerton, the Senate president, will have at least 31 Democrats next time around. because between the people who aren't running and the people who have no opposition, there are 31 of them who are going to be elected. There's already something like 70-some members of the House who are guaranteed election. And I say that even though we haven't gone through the general election. They are unopposed at this point coming out of the primary. Now, the opposition party has the opportunity to name someone to fill that vacancy in the nomination. There can be write-ins, but in since 2002, there have been something like 165 people who were added after the minute who were write-ins. None of them won. Only about a couple dozen of them even got as high as 40%. So right now, you could sit down and you could structure a roll call for people who have nothing to worry about, and particularly if it's bipartisan. If I'm going to attack you for voting for a tax increase, and you can come back and say, well, your leader in the General Assembly voted for it too, that's not a very effective argument.
But Charlie, speaking to the structured roll call, though, that seems to have required a level of trust that doesn't seem to be here this year.
Oh, obviously.
So do you think it'd be more difficult this time around?
Oh, yeah, of course it's more difficult. But on the other hand, again, and I lay it at the feet of the governor. The governor is the new player in all this. The rest of the cast of characters is pretty similar to the ones that have acted in the past. And so he's the guy who comes in with these ideas about restructuring the relationship between organized labor and the government, organized labor and private business. And his intent is to do this because he sees this as a way to bring economic growth and development and more jobs, kind of this trickle-down theory. And we've not had a governor of either party who was so determined to break organized labor to the point that they would let the rest of the state crumble, vital human services be destroyed, the higher education system, which if you look at reports from agencies and analysts saying what Illinois has going for it, one of the things we have going for us is our higher education system. To run the risk of destroying this because you have this commitment that most of the people in the legislature don't share, I think that's imprudent.
Let me, before we move on to a different topic, Brian, I'll let you have sort of the last word on this. But I have a question, and that is, if you're Bruce Rauner, though, isn't the budget the only thing you've really got? I mean, you know, there's talk of holding certain things hostage, but if he gives in on the budget, what's to say the Democrats are going to work with him on other things?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the conundrum for him. That is the big thing. And it's really the only thing that people, at least until this crazy fiscal year, people would say the only thing you really have to do is pass a budget. Well, now we've seen that I guess you really don't have to if you don't care about all these institutions kind of burning to the ground, metaphorically speaking. In terms of the last word, I think that this is mostly – obviously you have, as Charlie mentioned, the union thing is a huge – there's a lot of big, significant ideological differences about just what is best policy for the state. But I also think there's a big cultural difference here, which is the governor, you know, coming from the world of private equity investment where you buy a company and if it doesn't work out, you sell it at a loss and move on to the next thing. I mean, he's kind of maybe used to piloting a speedboat and he got himself elected captain of an aircraft carrier and is trying to apply that same sort of like, well, we got to do this, we got to do that, we're going to change this, change that, 44-point turnaround agenda. And I think that No one on his crew is, you know, has shown much of a willingness to sort of snap to, if you, before I kill this metaphor too much further, but you know, it's the state of Illinois and government in general moves slowly and incrementally, and he's trying to make it move fast, and that has been where the rub has happened.
Well, let's go back to the primary election night. We started hearing some people at the start of the show, mostly winners that night. Let me start with you, Monique Garcia. Anything that really stood out that surprised you that evening? Were there any surprises?
There weren't a lot of huge surprises. I would say, though, that in the race with Representative Ken Duncan and Juliana Stratton, it was a bit surprising at the margin of her victory. Usually, it's very difficult to take out incumbents, especially one who had enough money that Ken Duncan had from Republicans. But it also showed that Democrats did not take kindly to Republicans fussing around in their own primary election. So Ken Duncan is the Chicago lawmaker who bucked Speaker Madigan on several votes and sided with the governor. And so party leaders targeted him. And even President Obama got involved in endorsing Juliana Stratton over Ken Duncan in that race, and it was a complete and total blowout.
And do we think that Ken Duncan will change any of his votes as we head down the stretch? He's still in office for a while.
That's the question. I mean, he's always he's got until January, and he's always been a person who has not gone with the flow. He backed Blagojevich on a number of things, even though the tide was quickly turning for the governor there. Obviously, he's been willing to side with Governor Rauner here. So he's always kind of marched to his own beat. Now, whether or not he decides to have a change of heart and come back into the fold and pass a few things because he's on his way out, we'll have to see. Whether or not Democrats even want him to do that or not is another factor. People are very, very angry at him right now.
Well, Monique, you mentioned that it's very tough to defeat a sitting lawmaker. The governor did get involved in a state Senate race in his own party, going against the incumbent Sam McCann, who voted against the governor. So kind of the opposite situation there on some labor legislation earlier. Now, McCann was able to win. That's a central Illinois state Senate race, but it was pretty close. So, I mean, can we say that the governor, you know, really lost face with this race? Anybody want to tackle that?
I think that was another race that was a victory for unions, quite frankly. They poured a lot of money into defending McCann, and it was strange bedfellows again, where you have traditionally Democratic unions backing a Republican to try to keep somebody friendly in that office. But I think that the overall takeaway from a lot of this is that the governor is not very good at taking people out. He's okay at defending some people. He has some lower ballot races where his folks pointed to where, hey, he backed a couple of these folks and they won. But, you know, that doesn't get you points on the board. It keeps a couple members safe.
Of course, you know, how much he spent on these races is a drop in the bucket. If you look at his overall personal finances, I think he made $60 million in the last year that he's released his tax returns for, 50-something the year before that. So, I mean, he can continue to wage these battles. And of course, it's not over. State Senator Sam McCann has now complaints before the Board of Elections about questions about reimbursements of his mileage. He seems to have put on a tremendous number of miles for which he got reimbursed driving around his district. And I mean, one can imagine if that doesn't go well for him, you know, this could continue to dog him either in future elections or if other people begin to start investigating these sorts of things, prosecutors could start looking at it. That has not happened yet that we know of. But I mean, that's certainly a possibility that is now hanging over his head indefinitely. Sean, you had asked earlier what was surprising about this. Again, I was a little surprised, as Monique was, I think, by the margins, but the spending was stunning. I was trying to put this in context. I think $6.3 million in the State Representative Ken Duncan, Juliana Stratton race. I was trying to figure out what would be the historical analog to that. Jim Ryan, when he ran for governor against Rod Blagojevich, that's how much he spent for the entire second half of the year running statewide for governor. Now, that was, 14 years ago? So, I mean, it's a different time. Obviously, there's inflation and everything, but this is just a mind-blowing amount of money to spend on one single legislative race that encompasses a few square miles in the city of Chicago.
And a primary on top of it.
Right. I mean, this wasn't even the general election where these fights are expected to get even tougher and even more expensive. But the question comes is whether or not the governor changes his strategy a little bit. You know, he can throw money at a problem, but Republicans historically have not had as strong of a network in the state as Democrats have had. Now he's come in kind of as the savior of the Republican Party. He has a whole lot of money that he's willing to spend, but that doesn't always translate to troops on the ground and boots hitting doorsteps. And so we're going to have to see if he has the ability to translate that money more into actually turning out votes.
Yeah. And I've actually talked to political scientists in the past who say, you know, money only takes you so far. Once you have bought all the airtime and you start just overwhelming voters in a district with mailers and TV ads, they just kind of tune out. And as long as the other side can kind of keep up and match it with their own ads, it can be a wash in a lot of these races. And so for now, the governor has in the past moved to try and defund some of these government employee unions that were, you know, that have been helping out these candidates by, taking away the fair share payments. Now that's gotten held up in court, so they are still getting funded. And he is, and now they, you know, a lot of conservatives had pinned their hope on the United States Supreme Court making a ruling in a California case that could have very well had weakened public employee unions right here in Illinois. Of course, with the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, that case is now thought that it might go the other way, giving the unions at least a temporary reprieve until another test case might go before the Supreme Court in a few years.
Although
so,
by
I
law,
mean, unions are able to compete financially is the bottom line there.
Well, but they can't use member dues for political activities, or I'm sorry, fair share fees for political activities. That's against the law.
But I mean, if you presume that most money is fungible, then that does, you know, they can use the fair share fees for their normal operations, what might free up other fee. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but we got about a minute here before we go to notes from the field. But I did want to touch on another race that is now set. And we talk money. We're going to see a lot of money spent in the state of Illinois, it looks like, for the U.S. Senate. Tammy Duckworth winning the Democratic nomination pretty handily on election night. And, of course, we figured Mark Kirk would win on the Republican side, the sitting U.S. Senator. Brian or Monique, I mean, any idea of just where this one's going to go as far as the amount of money that's being spent? It's certainly being closely watched.
Yeah, I mean, this right now is viewed as one of the prime ways that the Republicans are going to try and defend their majority in the United States Senate. We have now for more than a year seen Senator Mark Kirk sort of tacking to the left on environmental issues. He's one of the few Senate Republicans who has said he will give at least a listen and consider President Obama's nominee to replace Justice Scalia on the Supreme Court, sort of breaking from his party on that to suit what is still a blue, a centrist to left-leaning constituency here in Illinois. But it's going to be the nexus of the fight to control the United States Senate in Washington.
All right, we're going to go now to notes from the field. Charlie Wheeler.
Well, we've been talking about the bill backlog, which the comptroller said could hit $10 billion by June. In testimony before a Senate Appropriations Committee, the Human Services Secretary James Demas said that more than 800 private companies that are doing work for the Department of Human Services haven't been paid because of the budget stalemate. They're owed about $168 million in overdue bills. So here's a case of private companies who the governor is out to protect working for the state under contract and not being paid because of this budget impasse.
Monique Garcia.
I'd like to note an interesting court case, actually, out of the western suburbs, where a Chicago man was found this week guilty of threatening a public official after he called Representative Jeannie Ives. She's a conservative Republican from Wheaton, and left threats on her voicemail, given her opposition to gay marriage. The attorney for this Chicago man says that he plans to appeal, citing issues of free speech.
And Brian Mackey.
Yeah, there was a story in the Southtown this about a week ago that the Will County officials are sort of conceding that the Illiana Expressway, which was going to connect I-55 and I-65 in Indiana through the far, far, far south suburbs — they're hardly even suburbs, I'm from that area — and the airport, the Piatone Airport, Will County officials are basically saying both projects are dead. I know I have relatives in the area who would be close to the flight path there, or the would have been the flight path, and I'm sure they'll be happy about that.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast today include Shirley Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Monique Garcia of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or you can search WUIS on iTunes. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.